time in 3 years. But she was not in that frame of mind a few years ago. And she used to speak to me. And when she did, whoa, I'm all sidriddled here today. Okay. When she was not in that place in her life, if I would have said to a 13-year-old Hannah, go clean your room, she would have used language that would make you blush. She would have used golf words, lots of them, and words you can't put on TV or something. Now, I want you to just take a different example, same scenario. I say to my daughter, Hannah, I have a MasterCard here from God. There's no limit on it, and we never have to pay the bill. Money is no object. Is there anything in your room you want updated, improved, anything you want brand new? There wouldn't be anything in that room but German Shepherds. Looking around like, what the heck happened? And that is the deal that God is making you. What are you hanging on to? What are you hanging on to? There's not a person in this room that doesn't know who they're mad at and why. There isn't a person in this room that doesn't know what they fear, who they fear, and why. There isn't a person in this room that doesn't know sexual harms done others and what happened. Where do resentments come from? Where do fears come from? Let's find out together, okay? We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, but it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning. Step three is a beginning. You get people, they come in and they say, oh, I did the first three steps. Step three is a beginning. Okay, it's very, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Next, not in a year, not in 2 years, and there are people within the fellowship that'll say, oh, you work a step a year, balderdash. Balderdash. It says next. It doesn't say in a year. It doesn't say in 30 days. It says next. Get on it. If you have a sponsor that's making you wait, find another sponsor. If you are a sponsor that's making people wait, reread chapter 7 and stop doing that. You're going to kill somebody. Okay? That's the bottom line. Okay? Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous thinking. Oh, I mean a course of vigorous action. Now, I hate to keep repeating this. Actually, I don't hate it. This is not a program for people who need it. It's not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. This is an action program. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision, which is step three is a decision and a beginning, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. I said this morning, and I'm going to talk about this now again as I promised you this morning. We come in here, many of us, with this idea that food and weight are the problems. Food and weight are not the problems. Food and weight are manifestations of the problem. Food and weight are manifestations of the mental twist and the physical allergy. The mental twist is the thought that's incessant and destructive. The mental twist is the thought that I have when I'm not eating and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. When I'm not eating, the pain of not eating is tremendously intense. And when people as a child would say to me, don't eat so much, you'll feel better, they were right. When I'm not eating, I feel anger better, I feel crushes on girls better, fear better, I feel selfishness better, guilt, shame, remorse, depression. I feel lots of things better. And as those feelings burst to the surface inside me like a Roman candle inside my heart, what happens is my brain says, eat the Raisinets. And my willpower says, no way, we're not eating Raisinets. And my brain says, or my mental twist says, eat the damn Raisinets. What's the use anyway? This time you'll just have one or two. I eat the one or two, I trigger the physical allergy. I feel the effect, I trigger the physical allergy, and I do feel better for about 4 seconds. And then the allergy is triggered, and I eat the more I want, the more I eat, the more I eat, the more I want, and it's just endless. Let's get down to causes and conditions. What is firing the mental twist? Is there anything we can do about the physical allergy? No. No. The only thing we have to suggest is entire abstinence. As long as I don't eat Kit Kat bars, I'm not going to eat 1,000 of them. But I can't keep from eating them because of the mental twist. How much simpler could I make it? If somebody has a suggestion for how I can make that simpler, see me after this and I'll change the way I explain it. Okay? Now, hold on a minute here. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Now, what we're going to do in the working of the steps is we're going to back off the mental twist. We're going to see what is firing the mental twist up. What is firing the mental twist that thought comes into my head that says, I want to eat Raisinets. What's coming into my head is coming in there because of resentments, fears, selfish, self-seeking, and dishonest. And what I'm looking for is a satisfaction to the basic instincts of life. There are three basic instincts of life. They are God-given, and they are good, and they are important. Make note of where we are, okay? And they are God-given, and they are good. The first basic instinct, this is in no particular order, is the social instinct. And the social instinct is a God-given instinct because human beings work better when they work together. Human beings have a better chance of survival when they work together. Cavemen in their agrarian culture found this out, that if they hunted in groups and they farmed in groups and they lived in groups, that they could live in more safety and they could live better. People have been realizing this for thousands and thousands of years, and that is why one of the first things you'll see in a person who usually goes off the deep end is they cut off all other people. They go against this instinct and they cut off all other people. The social instinct is that instinct that I have to be either the leader of the group or a part of the group, but don't exclude me. If you ever needed an explanation of this instinct, go to any middle school at lunchtime. And you will see that where you sit and the table that you sit at is more important than grade point average, than just about anything else, because it is a display of the group that you are fitting in with or not fitting in with. And so this is a very, very easy example with which to glean out the information on this instinct. Now, part of the social instinct is self-esteem. What I think of myself is usually not what I think of me. What I think of myself, now follow me here because this is complicated a little. It's what I think of myself, my self-esteem usually is what I think you think of me. Now sit with that for just a minute and you'll see it's right. I don't get up in the morning and think I'm either good or bad. In most cases, what I think is I will use what you think of me and how you respond to me as a way of governing how I think of me. And any threat to that social instinct, being a part of the group, not being part of the group, being excluded, either the group that I'm in or my ambitions for the future are going to upset me, and they're going to make me angry. They're going to cause me fear. And when they do, I'm going to power drive my will. I'm going to lie, manipulate, cheat. I'm going to do something to try to change this result so it goes my way. And in doing so, you're going to see through me. You're going to retaliate in kind, creating pain and suffering for me. And as you do so, my mental twist is going to drive me into the food. Can you see how simple this is? And yet we're not conscious of it, so we don't think that way. This is a very, very simple process. This is not, we're not talking about food. We're not talking about weight. We are talking about causes and conditions. Causes and conditions that have been driving me into the food my entire life. The second instinct is the security instinct. Now, the security instinct is God-given. It is hardwired into me by God, and the security instinct has a couple of different facets to it. The first one being physical security. If someone came in here and we perceived that they were going to harm us physically, it would cause me fear, cause me anger, and so on. We can all see that one. That's a very easy one to see. Another thing about the security instinct is emotional security. And as you act and as you react, you upset my ambitions for emotional security in the future, or you upset the emotional security that I currently have. And as you do so, you create pain and suffering for me. I, in turn, will retaliate against you, creating pain and suffering for you. And as I do so, you'll fight back. And as you fight back, you'll create fear and resentment within me because I'm not getting my way. Fear is, I didn't get my way in the future. Resentment is, I didn't get my way in the past. Very simple stuff. Very, very simple stuff. Now, as you do that, my mental twist is going to activate. And when the mental twist activates, it will drive me into the food. I will eat it, the allergy will manifest. I will pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to eat that way again. And I will repeat that cycle over and over and over again. One of the parts of the security instinct is financial security. And if you've listened to a bunch of four steps or you've done a bunch of four steps, there are usually two very prevalent subjects on any four step: finance and romance. Finance and romance. Those are the places that most people will glean out their resentments and fears more often than any other place. Finance and romance. Now, that emotional security, that financial security is something that is given to me by God. And as I work and work and try to get a better job and try to make more and more of a living, you may want that same promotion at the office. You may want that same client. You may want that same situation. And so as we start to compete, you see that our wills are colliding. And you see how that retaliation is going to create pain and suffering for me and activate the twist. Financial security is hardwired by God. Now, I believe in living one day at a time, and I also understand that its value is tremendous to live one day at a time. But like most people, I hope I'm not the only person in this room that has a life insurance policy. And every month I pay money so that in the event that I should pass away, my daughter, even though she doesn't like me anymore, that my daughter will have money with which to start her life. And every month I put a little money aside in a separate account that I have so that if something comes up in her life, I can be of service to her in that way. Now, I could use that money for something I enjoy. I could use that money for something I like. But it feels right to me to put that money away for her. And so this is something that is hardwired into us by God. And it's very, very important that we understand that as we do these things and as we believe these things, that financial security will put us in collision with other people. And when it does, we will create pain and suffering for them. They in turn will retaliate in kind, creating pain and suffering for us. And when they do, they will activate the mental twist, will eat the food, pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat that way again. Now, the last of the instincts is the sex instinct. The sex instinct is hardwired into us by God so that we will recreate ourselves or enjoy those relationships, things like that. And if we didn't have that hardwired into us, we wouldn't go through the gesticulations of courtship, and we wouldn't go through all the highs and lows in relationships and things like that, and work and work and work to try to hold them together. We wouldn't do those things. So this is something that's very important. And again, in the area of sex, the mate or the person that I'm currently with, I don't want anyone else taking that person away from me. Or if I have ambitions for the future in that area, let's just say I want to go out with a girl and I see that girl talking to some other guy. Right away I'm going to, oh my God, what's going on over there? Oh my God, oh, I'll never, now she's never going to go out with me. And usually that's true. But as that happens, I'm going to become very fearful. I'm going to become very angry. And in doing that, I'm going to power drive my will into it. I'm going to create pain and suffering for the other person or other people. And then they, in turn, are going to retaliate against me and create pain and suffering, trigger the mental twist. I'm going to eat, pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat that way again, and repeat the cycle over and over. Now, I've repeated that a bunch of times, but this is exactly what has been running in the background in your brain from the moment you were born, if you are one of us. This is the how and the why of it. And it has nothing to do with your aunt, your uncle, your cousins, your parents. Nothing to do with it at all. This is what makes us compulsive overeaters. Okay. Leslie?
So we had to get down to causes and conditions.
Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One subject is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. You want to get rid of the garbage that has been killing you. What are you hanging on to? The resentments, the fear. Resentment comes from an old word. Resentment comes from re, which means to do again, and sentire, which is to feel, to re-feel. Now, when I have a resentment, it is a lie. Let me say that again. When I have a resentment in my head, it is not true. It started on truth. It is not true anymore. Now, I'll tell you what my process is. I love the Chicago Bears. I do. I love the Chicago Bears. I have videotapes at home of the Chicago Bears winning the Super Bowl in 1986. I can tell you what play they're going to run. I can tell you what the announcer is going to say. I can tell you verbatim dialogue from the commercials that they play. I can tell you there. I know the music. I know the announcers. I know everything about that tape. I could reproduce it for you verbatim. That tape has something that I do not have. Fidelity. What is fidelity? Fidelity is honesty. Fidelity is consistency. I don't have that. When I feel some anger toward you, something happens in my heart and in my head that doesn't happen to my tape of the Bears or the Ducks winning the Rose Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl. I like the Oregon Ducks, too. I lived in Oregon for 9 years. Sorry, our coach left, but okay. I don't have fidelity. When I am angry at you and you let me work on that resentment for a while, I change it just a little bit every day. And every single time I think about that resentment, I change it just a little bit. And I change it just a little more. And I change it just a little more. Until I was standing there doing nothing, and you dirty dog, you came over and you did me bad. And now I'm going to resent all the other people that you're friends with that don't turn their back on you for hurting me. And now I'm going to resent your family. And before this thing is over, I'm going to resent the ship's captain that brought your ancestors over here on the damn Mayflower. Now you're laughing, but it's true. And I will repeat that resentment over and over because I love it. What's the payoff to a resentment? I no longer have to take responsibility for my own life. I can blame you. I can abdicate responsibility for anything. It's your damn fault in the first place. And if you hadn't have done that to me, I wouldn't be where I am today. How many dead horses are we going to drag into our lives? How many dead horses are we going to drag? How many dead horses are going to hold us back? How many dead horses are we going to nurture and feed? It's time to let it go. Don't forgive them because they deserve to be forgiven. Forgive them because you deserve not to be angry anymore, because this is what is driving you into the food. This is what has been killing you forever. It is not important who's right. What's important is what's right. And what's right is to forgive and let it go and give it to God. We think that because we are pissed off, that somehow they're not going to treat us that way anymore. That somehow, and as we get fatter and fatter and fatter, we've given these people the power to kill us. Resentments have the power to kill. There's no positive result from a resentment. None. Unless you own stock in Hostess or Raisinets or something. I'm on a Raisinet kick today. Why is that? There's other things I like. I don't know why I keep running back to the raisin. I'll have to use something else as an example now. What is the point of the M&Ms that are not peanut? That's another one I don't get. That's another one I don't understand. I don't know. It must be for some crazy cult of people or something. I don't get it. Right, anyway. Leslie? The same. Okay, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways what was had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Now, how much simpler could this be? Wake up. If you're sleeping, wake up. If you need to do a four-step, they are now going to give you the specific instructions. This couldn't be easier. When dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Column one, who or what do you resent? Okay. Column two, what did they do to you in 19 words or less? Because I don't want a novel of what they did to you. There's an example on page 65, the most words Bill uses for what they did was 19. That's good enough for me. Column three, what basic instinct is affected? What part of self is affected? Is it the social, sex, or security? In most cases, it's going to be a multiple of those things. So we have the instructions for the first three columns. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. What did they do to you? It's not always a person. I had other things on mine besides people. I'll give you an example of one I had. I had the expression, blood is thicker than water. Because anytime somebody said, blood is thicker than water, I was left out. I don't have cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents and all that. I don't have brothers and sisters and all that. I don't have it. So when they played the song about over the river and through the woods and grandma, I've never been to grandma's house. Grandma was dead long time before I came along. Long time. So I didn't have those things. So these are some of the things. People would say blood is thicker than water. There were other things, different things that would, you know, I'd have a resentment against the school system because I didn't get any help. Nobody came and said, hey, let's see if we can do something for you. I think today I couldn't fit in the seat. I couldn't, you know, I was in bad shape. Okay, so these are some of the things that are not about a person. They're about institutions or sayings. And that's why I bring those things up. Okay. Leslie? I got it. We asked ourselves why we're, right? In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? We were usually as definite as this example. We're just going to go through one. I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. Why? His attention to my wife affects my sex relations, self-esteem, fear. If he takes my wife, what are people going to think of me? What's the fear behind the resentment? If he takes my wife, she's going to take my house and all my stuff. So if I lose the wife, I also lose my stuff. I lose my car, I lose my house, I lose my cash, I lose everything. Okay? If you're sponsoring, there's a fear behind resentments. There's always a fear behind the resentment. Always. Okay. Told my wife of my mistress. Affects my sex relations. Fear. Sex relations, self-esteem, fear. Brown may get my job. I'm still resentful at Mr. Brown. We're still working on Mr. Brown here. Brown may get my job at the office. Security, self-esteem, fear. What's the fear? If Brown gets my job at the office, what's the fear behind that? The money, exactly correct. What else? If my wife finds out that Brown got my job at the office, she might indeed run off with him. And also, the social instinct is affected. Thank you. What if somebody finds out that Brown got the promotion at the office and I didn't? They're going to be thinking that Brown is a better guy than me. That Brown has something on the ball that I just don't have. That Brown is in some way a better guy than me. Okay, let's do one more. Mrs. Jones, she's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. Affects my personal relationship, self-esteem, fear. I'm still working on Mrs. Jones. She's a gossip. Affects personal relationships, self-esteem, fear. Oh, I left out a couple words here. He's committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. Personal relationships, self-esteem, fear. What's the fear behind the resentment against Mrs. Jones? She snubbed me. If she's snubbing me, maybe other girls will too. And if she goes and tells my wife that I made a pass at her, I don't think things are going to be very good there for a while. And it also affects my sex instinct too, doesn't it? Because if my wife thinks that I'm trying to play, you know, grab ass with some other girl, I'm probably not going to get a lot of sex in my marriage there for a while. Things are going to be kind of upset in that area for quite some time. So we see we live in an interwoven world. What do these things have to do with eating food? Everything. These are the things, these are the conditions, these are the causes that have been driving you into the food your entire life. We are not dealing with food and weight here. I'm not up here giving you recipes for diet mayonnaise, nor am I about to. I'm going to tell you from the big book how my life has been ransacked by these things, and that is that I ate food against my will constantly because I was scared and I was resentful. We might as well. My employer, unjust, overbearing, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing, self-esteem, fear, security, the money, self-esteem, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense accounts, self-esteem, fear, security. My wife, misunderstand and likes and nags, likes brown, pride, personal sex relations, wants house put in her name, security, fear. We went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain to see. Now tattoo this in your brain. It is plain to see that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it is fatal. And how does a resentment kill you? A resentment kills you because it activates the mental twist. Your brain is searching to feel better. In an attempt to feel better, you eat the food, trigger the allergy, pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat that way again, and you will repeat that cycle over and over and over again, the mind telling you it's okay and the body ensuring that it's not. This is the how and the why. These are the causes and conditions. We turn back for the list. Now we're going to get the instructions for the next column. The resentment is a 4-column, fear is 4 columns, sex is 5 columns. So we've done the first 3 columns of the resentment. Let's see where we come to the 5th column. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, harboring means to give safe haven, such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm. The grouch is the guy that's always mad. The brainstorm is the guy that's very explosive. He's not always mad, but when he is, look out. Were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turned back for the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Now, here's your specific instruction for the fourth column of the resentment section. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Uh-oh, we don't like to do that, do we? It's not fun to look at ourselves. We'd rather hold up the magnifying glass than the mirror. So the fourth column is, based on the defects of character, what did you do to set this in motion? What did you do? And this is something that is going to be very eye-opening when I start to look at my part in things. And as I look at my part in things, those resentments start clearing up right as I'm doing it. I start changing my perception. Okay. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Put it down. Put down your part in the resentment based on the defects of character. Okay? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? Now, I'm going to get this question, so I'll cover it now. If you've been sexually molested or you've been raped, what part did you have in that resentment? None. But the part you have is in hanging on to the resentment. The part you have is not having that willingness to let God be in charge, to leave retribution to God. Some of you were raped. Some of you were beaten. Some of you were abandoned. Some of you were molested. Some of you had grave injustices. I know a little bit about that, too. I grew up with a guy that had a little chip on his shoulder about his life, too. He had a few injustices, too. When he came to this country, he had heard things and seen things and smelled things that you're not supposed to hear and see and smell. And he experienced things you're not supposed to experience, and he did nothing to bring those things about. Nothing. But he wouldn't let it go. And he wouldn't let it go. And he wouldn't let it go. And this was every day. They're coming to kill us. 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 Every day. And if they'll come and kill you. When they came to kill me, they didn't catch me. I wasn't home. They didn't get me. And one day they'll come to kill you, and if they don't kill you, they'll kill your children. This is every day. He wouldn't let it go. Are you going to hang on to those resentments? Are you going to hang on to those resentments and live in the hell of Three Musketeers bars? Are you going to live in the pie and the cake and the cookies and the fries? Because if that's what you do, then that's what you'll eat and you'll die. And those people that beat you down and those people that molested you and those people that raped you, they're sick people. We pray the prayers on page 67 for them. But we're going to let it go because we don't want to give them the power to kill us. I gave this illness decades of my life. I'm not giving the son of a bitch one more minute. I refuse. Recover, recover, and recover. Live in spite of it. Live because of it. Hold God's hand. Test him. See if he will not move into your life in ways you can't even imagine. Four-column inventory for resentment. Who or what do you resent? What did they do to you? What part of self is affected? What part did you play? What did you do based on those defects of character which caused you or put you in a position to be hurt? Okay. Leslie. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. Those are your instructions. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Notice that the word fear is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employers and the employer and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. Here's your very specific instructions. Again, fear is a four-column inventory. Now, before we go to the fear inventory, relative to resentment, is there anybody in this room, show me your hand, you don't know why you're mad at them. Is there anybody in this room doesn't know what they did to you? Is there anybody in this room that doesn't know the part of self that's affected? There may be some, though. Is there anybody in this room that doesn't know what they did to set the ball in motion? If you don't, ask your sponsor. If your sponsor can't figure it out, call one of us. You know who you're mad at. You know what they did to you. You know what part of self is affected, and you know what you did to bring it about. We're not talking about anything more complicated than that. Now, honestly, do we need any other concordances and all these other things that are out there that are only designed to make money? I hope not. It's a piece of paper. It's got four columns on it. Down, 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 down. You can knock it out in no time. There's only one reason we'll delay it, and that's because we don't have step two. If you're struggling with step four, you're not struggling with step four. You're struggling with step two. Remember the example I gave you with my daughter in the MasterCard? That's your higher power waiting to give you brand new stuff. That's your higher power. Don't struggle with step two. Look for a description of God that does work in your life. Turn your life, which is your action, your will, which is your thinking, over to that God. Not a God you don't trust. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. First column, who or what do you fear? Second column, why do you fear them? Third column, part of self that's affected. Fourth column, what did I do to set it in motion based on my defects? Is that complicated? Who or what do you fear? I fear the landlord. Why? I didn't pay the rent. What part of self is affected? Social, self-esteem, and security. What did I do to set the ball in motion? I didn't pay my rent. Is that complicated? I hope not. If it is, we'll help you. Okay, we asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. This is beautiful stuff here. We never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. More often than not, what He would rather have us be is someone who does the right thing, helps others, pays bills, does things. We all know. We all have that God voice in us. Now about sex. Now, the sex instinct is a God-given instinct. It's given to us by God, and this is my opinion. Not OA's opinion, not AA's opinion. This is my opinion. God gave us the sex instinct so so that we could enjoy it, and/or we could recreate ourselves. Those are the right uses of the sex instinct: enjoyment and/or recreation. Not and, but and/or recreation of ourselves. If I use it for something other than that, I am going to create pain for someone else. What are some of the ways that we use the sex instinct for something other than what it was intended for? Now, again, I'm going to remind you, you do not have to take your clothes off. There's about three of you laughing at me, and I don't know why. But you do not have to take your clothes off to misuse the sex instinct. Okay? Let me say that again. You do not have to take off your clothes to misuse the sex instinct. For instance, are you flirtatious and encouraging at work with a person who has obvious feelings for you that you care nothing for, but you are using your God-given instincts to create a promotion for yourself or to enhance your job security? Now, enjoyment doesn't have anything to do with that. You don't have to take off your clothes for that. And recreation has nothing to do with that. Now, we talk about cheating as the most obvious way that we hurt and injure others. Now, again, this is my opinion. It is not always opinion, and we are not the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. This is my opinion. You cannot, or I cannot, work the 12 steps while I am breaking the 10 commandments. It is incongruent. It doesn't figure. It's a house divided. It doesn't stand. So I cannot do that. I would choose not to do that. I believe that if I am working the 12 steps, I must adhere to the 10 commandments. Okay? Now, cheating is one. Now, what about engaging in a sexual relationship with someone that we care nothing for to get even with another person? That has nothing to do with enjoyment, and that has nothing to do with recreation. That's using sex to hurt and control another human being. What about engaging in sex, not because you care for the other person at all, but engaging in a relationship because this person is providing food, shelter, and clothing for you that you'd rather not do without or work for? So you're engaging in a relationship with a person that you care nothing for, and this is another way that we abuse this situation. What about using sex as a way not to be lonely, just to attract attention? Sometimes people will use their God-given sex powers to just get somebody to notice them and pay attention to them. They care nothing for the person, but they just want a date on a Saturday night, or they feel the need for that fan club. They feel the need for that attention. And so they're using sex for something other than what it was intended for. And this is a very, very sensitive subject with many people. And this is a subject, when I first did my four-step, I had never even been on a date. So I told my then sponsor, well, I don't have to do this part. And they said, oh, yes, you do. You take every one of your relationships and subject them to this test. Are they honest? Are they manipulative? Are you in a relationship with a friend because of something you can get out of them? Or are they a binge buddy or whatever they are? And he made me do this in a way that I had never kissed any of them. I had never held their hands. He made me subject my relationships to these things. In other words, am I engaging in a relationship with someone for reasons other than what the instinct intended? So these are things which you can measure yourself. Now, again, this is going to be a five-column inventory. and I'll give you the five columns in a minute. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation, that we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? First column, who did you hurt? Second column, what'd you do to them? Third column, what basic instincts caused you to do that? Fourth column, what defects of character were in play when you did that? Fifth column, what should I have done instead? So the resentment is a four-column inventory. The fear is a four-column inventory. And they add one column in the sex inventory, what should you have done instead? Simple. 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 Okay. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal of our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we had done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. So much of life is about our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision, step 3, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, step four, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. This is not a be-all and the end-all. Step four is not the end result. You're not permanently catapulted into the eradication of your illness. What it is a beginning. And what we are looking at here, very specifically, are the causes and the condition of what has been driving you into the food your entire life. What has been driving me into the food is anger and fear and selfishness, dishonesty, and self-seeking. These are the things that have fired the mental twist. The mental twist will drive me irresistibly into the food. I eat the food. I trigger the physical allergy. I pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat that way again, and I will repeat that cycle over and over and over again, the mind telling me it's okay and the body ensuring that it's not. But because resentments and fears, selfish self-seeking and dishonesty will come back, we have other steps, particularly 10. And there are going to be three side results to the working of the steps. You're going to be right with God, you're going to be right with yourself, and you're going to be right with your fellow human being. And tomorrow morning, when you come, we're going to talk about steps 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. We're going to have discussions on those steps. We're going to do what we need to do, and we're going to give you, we hope, I hope, a much clearer picture of the simplicity of these steps, that they're not complicated, that they're not in any way written or devised so as to create some sort of complicated mess in your life, that they are simple. And if you just take some time to put them down on paper and discuss them with a sponsor that's in recovery, that knows the big book, you'll find that they're simple. Come back tomorrow and we'll do more. Come on.